morning and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to GrandVision's 2014 full-year results analyst call and webcast. I am Theo Kieselbach, GrandVision's CEO, and with me here is Paolo DiCastro, GrandVision's CFO. In today's call, I will start with the highlights of the full year 2014 and the fourth quarter 2014. Since this is our first call as a listed company, I will also give a bit of background on GrandVision as I go along, and will also focus on some selected achievements in 2014. Following that, I will hand over to Paolo, who will lead you through some details on the segment and financial performance. After that, we will be, of course, happy to answer all of your questions. Let me start with the highlights of the full year 2014 performance on page three of the presentation. 2014 was a successful year in which GrandVision achieved good financial results. GrandVision achieved revenue growth of 8.5% at constant exchange rates, with an underlying organic growth of 5.7%. The organic growth also includes new store openings, but was primarily driven by a comparable growth of 4.3% compared to 1.6% in 2013. Just as a reminder, we define organic growth as the growth of revenue, excluding acquisitions and at constant exchange rates, and we define comparable growth as the sales of those stores that were open for the complete previous year, so in this case, the year of 2013. The store network grew by 821 to a total of 5,814. I'd like to note the network expansion in our Latin American Asia segment, in which the network grew by over 50% to 1,175 stores. In terms of profitability, I'll focus on the development of the adjusted EBITDA. This is the EBITDA excluding the impact of non-recurring items, which in 2014 were related mostly to the recent IPO of GrandVision. The adjusted EBITDA reached 449 million euros, up from 400 million euros last year. Consequently, the adjusted EBITDA margin expanded by 68 basis points to 16%. The adjusted EBITDA excluding the effect of acquisitions, the so-called adjusted organic EBITDA, increased by 12.7%. On page four, we show the highlights of the fourth quarter in 2014. In the fourth quarter, total revenue grew by 12.8% at constant exchange rates. Organic growth was at 7.5%, and this was mostly the result of a comparable growth of 6.1%. Good comparable growth was achieved throughout the G4 segment. In other Europe, especially Scandinavia and Eastern Europe, performed strongly. The Latin American Asia segment saw double-digit comparable growth with notable results in Brazil and Colombia. Several acquisitions were completed shortly before or during the fourth quarter of 2014. In the quarter, these contributed to the top-line growth, but they had a negative impact on profitability in this period. The fourth quarter adjusted EBITDA grew to 106 million euros, up from 99 million in 2013. This is a combination of organic adjusted EBITDA growth of 11.7%, which was then reduced by 3.5 percentage points by the mostly late-in-the-year acquisitions. The adjusted EBITDA margin in the fourth quarter decreased by 62 basis points to 14.7% due to this acquisition impact. Excluding this acquisition impact, it grew by 62 basis points from 15.4%-16%. As this is our first call, allow me to also give you a quick recap of who GrandVision is. As laid out on page five, GrandVision is the global leader in optical retail. Our vision is to make high quality and at the same time, affordable eye care available to more and more people around the world. Currently, GrandVision operates in 43 countries across Europe, Latin America, and Asia, and in most of these, we hold a top three market position. The countries are divided into three distinctive geographic segments. First of all, our so-called G4 segment. This includes our largest business units, which are centered on the Benelux, France, Germany, and the U.K. This is our largest segment, which delivered 65% of the revenue in 2014. 2,979 stores were operated in this segment at the end of 2014. Next, the other Europe segment. This segment combines countries in the Northern, Eastern, and Southern European regions, including, among others, Finland, the three Scandinavian countries, Poland, Hungary, Italy, and Portugal. This segment accounted for 26% of the 2014 revenue with 1,660 stores. Finally, the Latin American Asia segment. This segment combines our emerging markets. Latin America and Asia are the two regions with the highest growth rate in optical retail in the world. This growth is driven by underlying socio-demographics, large, growing, and aging populations, ongoing industrialization, and emerging middle classes. GrandVision is now present in all sizable and attractive Latin American markets. The segment also includes China, India, Russia, and Turkey. It represents 9% of revenue and had 1,775 stores at the end of 2014. And GrandVision is the market leader in all these three segments. On page 6, you can see the development of GrandVision. It started when the investment company Hull Holding entered the optical market in 1996 by acquiring the majority share of the Dutch and Belgian operations of the U.S.-based Pearle Vision. In the first phase of our development, a unique geographic footprint was established through fast and international expansion. In the second phase, this, in the meantime, largest portfolio of local optical retail companies, which, however, were run mostly independently, was actually turned into the largest optical retailer. A global platform with numerous global capability was developed. Now, these global capabilities are further strengthened and are being deployed internationally. As mentioned, GrandVision's vision is to provide high quality and at the same time affordable eye care to more and more people around the world. For this purpose, we have established a clear set of 5 strategic priorities, which are shown on page 7. The first priority is to continue strengthening and deploying our global capabilities. Customer needs and the key drivers in the optical retail sector are very similar in most markets around the world. Based on this insight, GrandVision has developed and is internationally deploying a broad set of so-called global capabilities. The second priority is to drive comparable growth. We consider this to be the most sustainable and most profitable source of growth, as it best leverages the existing operating cost base. The third priority is the optimization of the existing store network, for example, through targeted store openings, relocations, refurbishments, but also store closures where customer traffic patterns have changed. The fourth priority is to expand further in current markets, also through bolt-on acquisitions. The optical retail market is still highly fragmented in all of our segments, with a high proportion of small chains and independent retailers, which operate smaller chains or single stores. GrandVision expands by acquiring and then integrating these. And finally, the fifth strategic priority is to enter new markets, when and where the right opportunity presents itself. For example, we entered the Peruvian, Turkish, and Chinese markets in 2014. However, any new market entry, as any acquisition in general, is always subject to a very disciplined approach. Let me share you now with you some examples of achievements from 2014. I would first like to talk about our exclusive brands portfolio and our sunglass business Solaris, which are described on page 8. Our exclusive brands offer our customers a full range of more affordable alternatives in all product categories without the need to compromise on quality or technology. In 2014, we made further progress in the streamlining of both SKUs and suppliers in all of our product categories. For example, in frames, we harmonized globally from over 430 previously private labels and 220 suppliers to now 21 well-defined exclusive brands and only 30 suppliers. This allows us to provide a stronger value proposition and also achieve faster replenishment cycles at higher quality and at lower cost. One important category for GrandVision is sunglasses. This is a very special category in optical retail. Traditionally, sunglasses are marketed as fashion items and not as eye care products. They are often sold through sunglass specialty stores as an accessory. But sunglasses also have several important functional benefits, including protection against UV radiation and glare, and improved vision for many different activities, including outdoor sports. And considering that over 50% of the population need eyesight correction, and the vast majority of these wear glasses, the need for sunglasses with prescription lenses is high. However, currently only 17% of the sunglasses that are sold actually have prescription lenses. To address this gap in the market of sunglasses with optical benefits, we have developed the sunglass format under the banner of Solaris. By the end of 2014, Solaris had already grown to over 800 points of sale. Most of these points of sale are actually within our existing stores. This gives customers who buy a new pair of prescription glasses or contact lenses also the opportunity to choose a pair of fashionable sunglasses that actually meet their needs, and it adds to comparable growth. Another achievement in 2014 was the opening of two additional so-called tech centers in Portugal and the United Kingdom, as mentioned on page nine. These tech centers are industrialized, large-scale, cut-edge and fit facilities which substitute the traditional final production and assembly of spectacles in store. GrandVision now has four tech centers in Europe fully operational. The tech centers provide benefits in terms of cost, production quality, delivery time, and delivery reliability. At the same time, our optical experts in the stores can focus even stronger on serving and consulting our customers. In 2014, we also completed a number of acquisitions, as you see on page 10. Acquisitions in Colombia, Germany, Italy, and the United Kingdom expanded the existing presence in these countries. For example, in Italy, we acquired Bandazzo with 190 stores in December, lifting us to the market leader position also there. In the U.K., we added 84 stores through the acquisitions of Rayner Stores and Conlon's. GrandVision has also entered three new markets through acquisitions last year, the Chinese market through the acquisitions of GrandVision Shanghai and the 78% share of Red Star Optical with together 52 stores, Peru through the acquisition of the 62% share of Topsa, which is operating 176 stores, and with the acquisition of Atasun, with which we established our presence in Turkey with 96 stores. With this, I would like to hand over to Paolo, who will take you through some more details of our 2014 results.
Thank you, Theo. Let me first begin with a segment review for the G4 on slide 12. 2014 was another good year for the G4 segment, and for the full year itself, revenue increased by 6.8% at constant exchange rates with organic growth of 4.8%. This was driven by comparable growth of 3.7% with a particularly good contribution of Germany, the U.K., and Spain. The number of our stores increased by 156 to 2,979, mainly resulting from the acquisitions in Germany, Italy, and the U.K., as well as store openings in France and the Netherlands. Adjusted EBITDA in the G4 increased by 11.1% at constant currencies and 10.2% organically, with an adjusted EBITDA margin expanding from 19.3% to 20%. All business units improved their margins in the G4 during 2014, and this 20% is of course a blend of different business units, some well above it and some below. As for the fourth quarter, revenue in the G4 segment grew by 9% at constant exchange rates with organic revenue growth of 7%. Comparable growth itself came in at 5.9%. Adjusted EBITDA grew by 13.7% in the quarter at constant currencies, and the margin improved by 68 basis points to 19.2%. Again, here, all G4 countries, and especially Germany, contributed to the year-end performance. Turning to slide 13. In the other Europe segment, full year revenue increased by 7.3% at constant currencies with organic growth of 6.1%. The main driver was comparable growth of 4.1%, with a good performance of most countries within the segment. In particular, our business in Northern Europe and Eastern Europe performed higher than the average of the segment this year. Also, the store expansion in 2013 and 2014 contributed to the revenue growth. In total, the number of stores in the other Europe segment increased by 248 to 1,660. Within that, the Optissimo acquisition in Italy late in December was the main driver behind the store growth number. Organic adjusted EBITDA in the other Europe segment grew by 25%, meaning that adjusted EBITDA margin increased by 15.6% in 2014 from 13.3% in 2013. The other Europe segment also had a strong year-end with, during Q4, a revenue growth of 8.6% at constant currencies and comparable growth of 5.2%. Adjusted EBITDA itself grew by 21.2% in organic terms, leading to an EBITDA margin expansion also during Q4 and reaching 15.3%. Moving on now to the Latin America and Asia segment on slide 14. There, last year's revenue increased 23.7% at constant exchange rates or 11% organically. Underlying comparable growth came in at 9.4% with strong performances in all markets, several of which reported double-digit growth. The acquisitions in China, Colombia, Peru, and Turkey added 12.7% to revenue growth. Last year, we also crossed the 1,000 store mark in the segment, reaching 1,175 stores at year-end. However, adjusted EBITDA was down 7.8% as reported because many acquisitions in the later part of the year had a negative effect in the region and diluted the organic EBITDA development that was achieved in Brazil, Colombia, and Russia. In fact, the underlying EBITDA growth was over 100%, as you can see on the chart. As a consequence of this, the adjusted EBITDA margin decreased to 1.9% in 2014. However, it is important to note that when excluding these 2014 acquisitions, the adjusted EBITDA margin would have continued to grow and would have reached 4.6%, which is a doubling of the prior year's EBITDA margin. And this acquisition impact was even more pronounced in the fourth quarter, as the vast majority of our acquisitions, and certainly the bigger ones, happened in the later part of the year. Revenue in Q4 grew by almost 50% at constant exchange rates, driven by the acquisitions in Turkey and China. The underlying comparable growth was double-digit at 10.4%. Turning now to slide 15. On this slide, you will see that our track record on growth over the past 3 years. Grand Vision drives growth through a balanced performance across these three levers of growth, as Theo explained earlier. Comparable growth, or like-for-like growth, then network expansion, meaning opening more stores where we are already present. These two combined create our organic growth, which is shown on the graph. And then finally, the third lever, acquisitions, with these acquisitions being bolt-on or new market entries. With regard to comparable growth, this has improved from 0.8% in 2011 to 1.6% in 2013 to 4.3% in 2014. And within these numbers, volume growth was higher. And as we previously explained, we also saw positive contributions from acquisitions in all 3 years, especially over the last 2 years. Total revenue CAGR for the 3 years was 5.5%, with the 2014 revenue growth of 7.5% being, of course, ahead of this average. Similarly, and you can see on this next slide 16, our track record of adjusted EBITDA growth and margin expansion. Grand Vision's average EBITDA growth over the last 3 years, in reported terms, was 8.9%. EBITDA margin expanded from 14.5% in 2011 to 16% in 2014. How does this translate into cash flow? On the next page, slide 19, you can see that 2014 was another year of robust cash flow generation, with cash flow from operating activities increasing to 380 million euros, which is a 14% increase. Free cash flow reached 222 million euros. Capital expenditure came in at 158 million euros compared to 113 million in the previous year. This was mainly due to an additional investment of 33 million euros related to the optimizations or the continuous optimization of our existing store network through renovations, relocations, and of course also new store openings. Our non-store CapEx increased by 12 million, and this increase is related to the two net tech centers in Portugal and the UK, and investments into the global ERP system. The two new tech centers are now fully operational and are providing us growing benefits in terms of costs, quality, speed, and customer service. Our year-end net debt, our year-end net debt ratio was 2.1 times, in line with prior year. This constant level was mainly due to the financing of the Angelo Radazzo acquisition in Italy in late December. Overall, you can see that we were able to make a large number of acquisitions over the past few years while reducing our net debt to EBITDA from 3.1 times in 2011 to 2.1 times in 2014. This was enabled by our strong and growing cash flow generation, coupled with our asset-light model. And finally, on slide 18, let me remind you of our medium-term financial objectives. We are expecting to deliver annual revenue growth of at least 5% at constant exchange rates. This includes small bolt-on acquisitions, but would exclude larger size deals such as Randazzo. We are also expecting annual adjusted EBITDA growth in the high single digits at constant exchange rates. In terms of the financial structure, we are targeting a net debt EBITDA ratio of maximum 2 times. This is comfortably below our covenant in our syndicated facility of 3.25 times. We expect our strong cash flow generation to enable us to make further acquisitions without significantly altering our capital structure, and this while paying a dividend. And as previously communicated, for the fiscal year 2015, GrandVision intends to pay an interim dividend of $35 million to the shareholders in September, subject to board approval. And the remainder of the dividend over the financial year 2015 will be determined at the general meeting in 2016 and paid in May 2016. Beyond 2016, we intend to pay an ordinary dividend annually in line with our medium to long-term financial performance and expect to increase the dividend per share over time. As a result of this policy, we are targeting a dividend payout ratio of between 25 to 50%. And with that, I would like to turn back to Theo. We will wrap up the presentation before the Q&A session.
Thanks, Paolo. As you heard, 2014 was a successful year for GrandVision. But the developments in 2014 have also confirmed the attractiveness of GrandVision's business model. As you see on page 19 of your presentation, GrandVision has built a unique platform with three distinctive parts. The G4 segment is a large segment with a high level of profitability, which actually sets best-in-class standards and also generates a high level of cash. And it has further grown and has also improved the margin in 2014. The other Europe segment has shown improved growth and has narrowed the margin gap with the G4 segment in 2014. And the LATAM and Asia segment has in 2014 increased the exposure to the highest growth markets through the store network expansion. It's achieved high growth rates while at the same time further improving the margin of the core business when excluding the new acquisitions. And at this point, I would like to ask our moderator, Mary, to open the Q&A session.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now take our first question from Robert Voss of ABN AMRO. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I have three questions, please. Firstly, the working capital seemed to have turned negative quite materially since September. Can you explain what caused the steep increase in trade and other payables and whether this is sustainable? That's my first question. The second one is you reiterate your midterm outlook, so that obviously also applies to 2015, but your M&A was quite back-end loaded in 2014, and therefore it's fair to assume that there will be a material sales contribution from recently completed M&A. Why have you not opted for providing a bit more specific outlook for 2015? And my third question, can you say something about your M&A pipeline? Is it fair to expect more in 2015, or will you be focusing on integrating the recently completed acquisitions first? Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you for the questions. This is Paolo. On the working capital trend, in fact, the underlying working capital is not getting worse at all. This the what you see there is mainly is solely the impact of the recent acquisitions, nothing else. So in terms of working capital, we are, you know, the performance is actually improving. The underlying.
Sorry for the confusion. I meant that working capital was a positive at 9 month numbers, but due to the steep increase in trade and other payables, it actually was negative as a percentage of sales at the end of the year. So that was my question. I didn't mean to say that it was a negative trend, but it turned from a positive number based on the numbers you reported to a negative number.
We agree with your conclusion. So that's exactly it.
Okay.
And then moving on to the other two questions, which were I will pass on to Theo, I believe.
Yes, thank you, Paolo. Addressing the question on the – there were two questions. One was on the midterm outlook and the impact of the last year acquisitions. As Paolo said, the guidance we give on the midterm development of a minimum of 5% revenue growth per year would exclude large acquisitions as the Randazzo deal. But if we give an outlook in general, we sometimes, of course, have these and sometimes we do not. So we will not include them to our medium-term outlook. And at this point, we don't really want to give a further outlook for 2015 because we'd like to manage our business for the longer term and not on a month-by-month or quarter-by-quarter basis. And therefore, we'd like to then refer to our Q1 result release in May. Talking about the pipeline of acquisitions, GrandVision, of course, has a very, very strong history of acquisitions over the last 19 years. As I've mentioned in the development, that is very much has been a key element of the growth and development of the company. We are always in discussions with potential targets in existing markets and new markets, but it's very hard to forecast when these will actually happen because we remain extremely disciplined when we actually do these acquisitions. Therefore, while there are, of course, ongoing discussions, as always, we will not be able to forecast or give a perspective on when we actually expect these to realize.
Maybe as an add-on, it's not a reason, the recent number of acquisitions, so at the end of 2014, is not a reason for you to shift to a lower gear concerning your M&A strategy.
Not at all.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Marco Gulpers of ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions from my side. First, can you clarify the increase in the corporate costs year-on-year in the fourth quarter? Is there any one-off related costs in there, maybe related to the IPO? The second question is on FX. Could you update us on what your expectation is for the FX movements based on current spot rates for 2015? The third question is basically on one of your peers mentioned that Luxottica, that they saw a quite strong start in January and February in Europe. Are you seeing similar trends like that? And they also added to that that emerging market actually saw an acceleration in growth. And the last question I have is on the promotional intensity in the Benelux. It seems that you're now offering three pairs for the price of one. Is that something that you feel comfortable with, or is that just a temporary promotional step up? Thank you.
So I'll start. So in terms of the central costs, what you're seeing there is the effect of the centralization of our global capabilities. Nothing else. So in terms of overall, let's say, support costs or overheads or whatever you want to call them, our track record is on the good trend. So it's essentially that, the building up of our global capabilities and therefore the projects related to that. And then in terms of the Forex movements, obviously, everyone has hopefully seen that the euro has devalued against the U.S. dollar, and we've seen that, of course, already last year. In terms of the impact of such movements in our P&L, we buy about 10% of our cost of goods sold in U.S. dollars. We hedge that 12 months rolling forward. You will remember the gross margins that we achieve. So all in all, it is, of course, a small negative impact that has. But again, that is being hedged and therefore covered 12 months forward. So not a significant or major item or impact at all. And now for the other two questions, I think I would hand over to Terry.
Yes, the question on the beginning of the year with also relationship of other comments made by some of our peers. What we'd like to do is we'd like to, as I've already mentioned, refer back to our medium-term guidance again, because that's our perspective on growing this business in the longer term. So I, at this point, do not want to comment on specifics of the beginning of the year, other than maybe that we're comfortable in the way it started. Your question on the promotional activity in the Netherlands, very well observed. And yes, it's a 3-for-1 offer, and I think it's a very good example of what we're actually doing in many, many countries. Also, the specific campaign is something that we do in many, many countries. And it's right in line with what we want to do, which is offering more affordable and high-quality eye care to our customers. And to your question, are we comfortable with that? Well, I guess at that I refer to the developments that Paolo said, that we've been able to grow nicely in the last year and also in our G4 segment, and therefore also in the Netherlands, while at the same time increasing our margin. So yes, we're very comfortable with that. And we believe that we can actually continue to lead this sort of value proposition to our consumers.
All right. Maybe a small follow-up question for Paolo. On the corporate cost again, sorry to disturb you on that. It's now at minus 1.2% to sales, and that is basically a run rate that we should look at going forward, or is that not the case?
I would not look at corporate costs alone. I think, as I said, I prefer to look at the total support costs or total overheads, because that is, let's say, a more relevant metric, operational metric, whether we are being more efficient with what we, the way we are organized. And once again, that might vary depending on the number of projects that we have in process, so to speak, across the future years.
All right. Thank you.
We will now take our next question from Craig Abbott of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions from my side. First of all, on 2014, I just wondered if you could give us a little bit more of a breakdown of the two components of your comparable or organic growth, one or the other, in terms of price and volume mix. And going into 2015, I just wondered if you would expect further negative price effect, or is this price adjustment process now largely complete? Secondly, we realize now you're not going to give us a more specific 2015 guidance, but I just wondered if there are any issues, either positive or negative, that we should be aware of. For instance, the French reimbursement cuts, if there are any particular comp-based effects. In Europe last year, we certainly saw a very strong Q1 because of a weak comp, and the year before because of weak because of winter weather. I just wondered if any issues like that you would think we should be aware of. And my final question is, I just wondered if you could give us maybe kind of a run rate indication of your planned organic store openings in 2015, or a run rate going forward on your organic store, net store opening plans. Thank you.
Well, I think I'll take the first question, and then Claire will handle, I think, the French so-called deregulation process. So in terms of the price volume breakdown, you're well aware that we don't disclose the numbers, but as we've previously said that over the past 3 years, our volume growth has been higher than the total comparable growth, meaning that we have continued to invest in affordability and value for our customers across these periods. And, you know, our intent is to, let's say, continue to that trend. So, you know, I would always expect, I would expect in general volume to growth to be higher than the comparable growth.
Yes, then I hope I get the questions to the right. The one was also on the continuation of price resetting or price positioning. As we've mentioned, and really true to that, is that we offer high quality products at affordable prices. We expect to maintain that position and to further strengthen that positioning. So while we have aligned all of our countries in the past to this commercial proposition, so what you would call the resetting, which has taken place, I would say, very strongly in the years 11 and 12. We are now reset, but we still believe that we will continue to invest into pricing, and we will be able to invest into pricing as we've done in 2014 through the efficiency gains, including purchasing improvements, to transport those benefits to our customers, while at the same time, as in 2014, we've been able to actually increase our margins all around. So I believe that that's very much at the heart of what we do. In terms of major issues, I think if there would be really major issues, that's something we would of course disclose. So as we've not disclosed anything, I guess the answer to that is no. In reference to the French deregulation, which is sort of an extended process and might still extend, and it's hard for me to really speculate on how that will play out and when. I can only say that, in general, in the past, we have been extremely comfortable in situations when markets have deregulated because this usually puts price pressure into the market, which then is very much to the benefit of the more affordable offerings to which we count ourselves. So deregulation in all countries that we've observed it in the past has been something that has actually helped us grow our market shares and develop our business. And again, you see the margin developments in the history and the effects of that. A track record in opening stores. So I refer back to our strategic priority number three, which is ongoing optimization of our store network. The markets we operate in are, in general, still very fragmented. Also in the G4, they are still very fragmented. So store network expansion and also market share growth through store network expansion has been a very strong element of the development of our business. And you see in the numbers that Paolo has shown in the split up of the organic and acquisition-based growth that store openings have always been a strong contributor to this. And again, the combination of our very strong experience and history in store opening combined with the high level of fragmentation in the markets would make me believe that we don't expect that to change.
Okay, thank you.
We will now take our next question from Julian Easthope of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I've got three questions, if I may. The first one is to do with your comp store growth. I think last time we spoke, you said that the comp store growth at the nine-month stage was actually relatively high because you had an easy comp, and yet you accelerated in Q4. I just wonder whether or not this is actually a new trend, that the price positioning that you have has kind of given you greater leverage and you're now seeing just greater comp store growth generally. The second question comes through on the tech centres. You had two that were building up last year. Presumably those will have quite a decent improvement in terms of the margin you get from your European businesses this year as the efficiencies of those are now hit peak levels. And lastly, in terms of acquisitions, in Q4 there was a minus 3.5% on the margin. I just wondered if those included sort of integration costs and some additional costs there, or whether or not there is actually going to be quite a significant margin dilution in 2015 as we annualize the acquisitions. Thank you.
So I'll start with the first one. Yes, I mean, there are, of course, integration costs in those numbers. However, you know, particularly for the larger sized acquisitions, there is, you know, an integration roadmap, and therefore there will continue to be some dilution through the year. But, you know, that is in line with historical trends and historical patterns when we do acquisitions.
But it would be less than Q4.
I wouldn't comment on that. Then on comp store growth, yes, you know, we are particularly pleased, of course, with the Q4 comparable growth that we witnessed. And whether that is a new trend, I wouldn't comment on. We are particularly pleased indeed with, let's say, the increased robustness, broadness, and less volatile comparable growth that we are experiencing. And I will leave it at that.
Let me refer to the tech center question. Obviously, these tech centers, as we've mentioned, give us significant improvements. Also on the cost side, but also, as we mentioned, the quality and delivery standards. We have now these four tech centers operational. We've added two tech centers in 2014, which are fully up and running. The integration process of tech centers in a European context, meaning moving all the volume through these tech centers, is something that is not done within a couple of months or 6 months. So that is an ongoing process which we refer to in the deployment of our global capabilities, which will continue also in the future.
Okay, thank you very much.
If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We will now take our next question from Joost van Beek of Theodore Gillissen. Please go ahead.
Good morning. First, start with a remark, which is on the earnings per share. If you look at it correctly, earnings per share is calculated after amortization, whilst a lot of companies publish these numbers before amortization. So my question is, what is the reason for you to publish it after amortization? Then basically follow-up question on acquisitions. You mentioned acquisitions have some integration costs, so that was a reason why this had a negative contribution to EBITDA last year. Looking into 2015, do you expect those acquisitions which you completed last year will be positive in terms of EBITDA? And maybe you can also give us some idea about the contribution of profitability of Randazzo, which is quite a large acquisition recently completed. Then question on non-recurring costs. Obviously, they were quite high related to the IPO and also well communicated. Is there, do you expect some non-recurring costs in 2015 that we should already count on? And my final question is on capital expenditures for 2015.
Okay, this Theo, we'll work through these questions one by one. I'll start off maybe coming back to the acquisition part and the integration cost. Acquisitions, there are very different acquisitions, of course. There are acquisitions of, let's say, a more mature company, like you mentioned, Randazzo, 180 stores, Italy, serious size. There are acquisitions in emerging markets. When we look at acquisitions in those situations, we are, as in the past, mostly interested in the top-line contribution and the sustainability of that top-line contribution. And I would say, at the point of acquisition, less concerned about the performance, because we have a very strong history of integrating these acquisitions and basically replacing the existing P&L with our P&L through the various lines of the profit and loss statement, of course. Now, the extent of that and how long it takes to move those things depends very much on a situation-by-situation base, and it's hard to generalize. Of course, we have a very strong track record. Again, we've been doing this acquiring and integrating over a span of 19 years. And there, of course, in the first year of acquisition, we usually have additional costs that come at the very beginning, and then we see, according to our track record, a development of those acquisitions to where we'd expect the performance to be in general in our business in the various segments. And that can be a question of months if it's a small add-on acquisition, or it can be a question of, I would say, a couple of years if there is a more serious restructuring, a rebranding, and the likes involved. So it's hard to generalize, but we, of course, do acquisitions to profitably grow the business and not only grow the business. So we expect the developments of the margin of these acquisitions to follow then the segment performance they're operating in. Then we had the question on
Finish with here after amortization.
As far as I know,
and I'm pretty sure of it, we are calculating earnings per share in a conventional way. Maybe the confusion comes from the fact that we, of course, use net result attributable to equity holders, and then we calculate the pro forma earnings per share based on that number. So for us, I think that is the correct calculation.
So that means after amortization, to be clear on that?
Yes. Okay. Net result.
Yeah, again, but as I said, a lot of companies give these numbers before amortization.
Okay.
Or give both numbers.
This is how we'll report it for Grandview.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Then you had a question on the non-recurring cost. You're very right. As documented, I would say there were exceptionally high non-recurring costs in 2014. Related to the IPO, and there, as you can also read, very strongly related to the adjustments to the various LTIP programs, long-term incentive programs throughout the company. In general, we believe that costs have to be managed within the business. While there might be non-recurring, we would not expect them to be at the level of the previous year. We don't expect to do another IPO next year. CAPEX is as we've explained, there are two, I would say, distinctive elements of CAPEX. The biggest share of our CAPEX is, of course, invested into our stores for store renovation, store openings, optimization of our store network. That is the core of what we do, and that is where we, of course, expect to invest wisely into the store expansion that we also touched on in one of the previous questions. In 2014, as you can also see, there were non-store investments related to the additional two tech centers that went online in 2014, and also, as Paolo mentioned, the investment into the global ERP system that's being developed. With four tech centers now operating in Europe, we consider that we have probably our tech center network operational, also the major ERP investments have been done. Investments in non-store operations probably saw a very high level in 2014.
And you had a fourth question. It's fair to assume that CAPEX could therefore be lower.
Well, the point is, I would hope that looking at our cash generation and the performance of our business, we find plenty of ways to invest wisely. Highlighting the word wisely on that one. So store openings, of course, are driven by CAPEX, and that's also driven by opportunities.
Wisely and effectively, because we have a number of programs that drive, let's say, CAPEX usages to a more effective levels. Our store harmonization and fitting, for instance, is a good example of that. the fact that, for instance, through the tech centers, we no longer need to invest in costly machinery to put in every store, et cetera, et cetera. So more on, we expect more, not only wise, of course, but also more, let's say, effective spend.
Right, thank you.
We will now take a question from Sander van Oort of Kempen. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Sander van Oort, Kempen. Four or five questions. First of all, maybe you can elaborate on the working day impact in the fourth quarter and also maybe discuss what to expect from 2015. Second question is about also about the competitive situation in the Benelux. Recently heard a marketing campaign that you're saying that you have longer opening hours in your stores in the Netherlands. I was wondering, is it also the case in countries outside of the Netherlands? And to what extent is are you responding to competition, or is this one of the new initiatives to gain market share in the Netherlands? And maybe is it also causing costs to go up, or is it fair to assume that your stores will open later in the morning? Third question is on the update on the Solaris rollout. Maybe you can provide us a number with the number of stores that now have this Solaris assortment in their stores. And the fourth question is on the G4. In the presentation, you explicitly mentioned that Germany, UK, and Spain reported strong growth. Maybe you can provide a bit of more additional details to what extent it's due to successful promotions. Is it just the recovery in the market? Are you gaining market share? These kind of elements. And the fifth and the final question is about the lower margin acquisitions in LATAM Asia. Is it fair to assume that margins will go up already quite shortly, so in the short term, given the lack of any further integration costs, or will it take a few quarters before you will improve profitability of these acquired businesses? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let me start off with the question on the Netherlands, the competitive structure, opening hours. Store opening hours are very much dependent on, in a general, on country, let's say, habits. The Netherlands store tends to close on certain hours or days. In other countries, we'd have them open 7 days a week, and some countries will have them open 7 days a week in commercial centers and limited in high street locations. So this is it's very hard to generalize for the whole network. What of course we do always do, and we have very very strong KPI measurement on individual store level. We are always looking at optimizing the performance, of course, of the stores, which includes growth. We've mentioned comparable growth, but of course also the profitability of that. So again, our activities on the commercial side, which include the promotions we've talked about, which includes the accessibility of our stores to store openings, is always looking at improving our performance, our top line, and our margin. And again, I can then only relate back to the track record and the performance in 2014, where we've been able to achieve both these things. So we want to be accessible, and we will adjust to what we need to do. And we believe that with the platform we're building and the operational and global capabilities we have, that we can do we can both invest into accessibility and into our commercial offerings, and at the same time increase our margins. So we like these developments. Any sort of deregulation, any sort of additional competition, if you so like, is something we very, very much embrace, and we're very, very comfortable with seeing. Solaris, we've mentioned the story of Solaris, which has developed over the last, I would say, couple of years. At this point, we have 811, I believe, is the number, or at this point, end of 2014, 811 Solaris points of sales, of which the majority is in our stores. Looking at the strong expansion that you see in this, and looking also at the performance in 2014 in general, we are satisfied with the performance of that. We have over 5,800 stores, of which now 811 have these corners. The expansion rate has been very, very strong, as depicted in the presentation, and we would expect that expansion to continue at a very high rate also in the future, while we increase the coverage of the Solaris point of sales throughout our countries.
And on the trading days, we will comment on the trading days impact on our quarterly updates if that has a significant impact. Otherwise, we won't even mention it. So that will be done, as I said, when we publish our trading updates.
Question on the underlying reasons for good performance in a number of countries. Paolo has mentioned that we have seen in general a very, very satisfying comp growth in the previous year. He has also mentioned that this comp growth was has seen even a stronger underlying volume development, which is again fully in line with the ambition of our positioning, which is to provide high quality, affordable products. So we have more volume increase. So seeing the comparable growth numbers, and if you compare them with the market developments that are available for 2000 last year, you will see that GradVision has, in all segments, gained market share. So to answer your question, market share growth. Also on the comparable side, volume increase, so volume share increase, which means customer number of customers increase. And through the additional growth of store network, of course, we're also taking market shares in the country by increasing our accessibility to our customers. We know that optical retail is a fairly local retail, and accessibility to customers is a very important criteria to gain market share, which is also, as we believe, one of the key reasons why there's still a high level of fragmentation in the markets in which we operate in.
We will now take the final question from Paul Rossington of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Most of my questions have been asked, but I've got two very, very small questions, actually, I guess. Firstly, when you acquired the Randazzo business in Italy, it wasn't clear whether you were going to pursue a single or a dual brand strategy in that market. I don't think you'd made up your mind at that stage. I'm just wondering if you'd made any progress on deciding what your strategy for Italy is. And secondly, should we be aware of any other impending change in legislation in any other markets out, excluding France? Is there anything that's appeared on the horizon at all in the last 3 months?
Okay. The first question on Randazzo, well observed. They're two big companies. Now, Avanzi, which is, of course, the organization we have had for decades, and then Randazzo with the brand of Optissimo. These two organizations, which we are very pleased with, are have very little overlap. Avanzi has a strong presence mostly in the northern part of Italy, Optissimo more in the southern part. So it's a very, very nice fit together. Looking at the strategy for Italy is, of course, to have a strong approach into the Italian market. We are the market leader with national presence now in Italy. But that is, of course, something that needs to be very well thought through. The acquisition was completed at the end of December 2014, so it would be absolutely premature to make any assumptions on how that will play out. This will has to be very well thought through. We have two ongoing businesses which separately have very strong track records and history in their respective markets, and therefore we are very, very appreciative of that, and we will think very well through how we develop this going forward. There's nothing that we could or want to say at this point in time on that. And your second question, I apologize, slipped my mind.
I was just wondering if there'd been we're all aware that there could be a kind of a change in legislation in France. I'm just wondering if there have been any other suggestions of change in legislation in any other key markets.
I guess the answer to that is nothing that we are aware of.
Thank you.
But I mean, France in our, yeah, so nothing.
As there are no further questions, I would like to turn the call back to the speaker for any additional or closing remarks.
I would like to thank all of you for giving us the opportunity to explain our full year results. As we said, this is was the first analyst and webcast call for GrandVision after we listed in February, and we're looking forward to the ongoing dialogue with all of you. Thank you very much for attending.